Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Betty.
And I'm Shad.
And this week, we got hammered on three Hammer films.
Yes, we spent the day watching Hammer films, which, whew, that's a day. We watched Night Creatures, Paranoiac, which I didn't even know was a word, and Kiss of the Vampire.
So, we're going to start off with Night Creatures, which also has another name.
Also known as Captain Clegg.
Captain Clegg. This film was kind of slow. They're all kind of slow. I mean, they have that British, I'm just going to take my time with it. It's like a fine wine.
Well, all the movies back then were a lot slower paced because people were just so, thrilled to be in the movie theater. They weren't in a hurry to get out of there,
That's true.
It was air conditioned, there was popcorn. They didn't want to go anywhere. It was an all-day experience back at the time. Because you went and you watched the coming attractions, the newsreels, the serials. Then you watched like four movies and got your popcorn and it cost 18 cents for the whole day. So,
The good old days.
The good old days. People weren't in a hurry to leave the movie.
But you got paid like 1 cent though for like your day's pay.
Yeah, so it took like 3 weeks to be able to go to the movie. So that's why people weren't in a hurry to go. Or weren't in a hurry to leave, rather.
Well, we saw these films because these are family-friendly films, too. Yes. So, during this quarantine time, we always have our little one with us. But it's the weekend, and we happen to be both together, Shad and I. Shad works in the retail world, so it's not an every weekend thing that can happen. Or does happen, I should say. So we were able to buckle down and get hammered, but without the liquor.
Yep. Well, Night Creatures, I was expecting something kind of different from it. You've got Peter Cushing, of course, because he's in every Hammer movie, I think. Or almost all of them. And Oliver Reed, who's in three of the movies. Two of the ones we watched today, and one more that's in this set that we have. And, so Night Creatures is a small village in the 1790s, where they are all bootleggers, and they are hiding all their bootlegging from the king's men who want them to pay revenue on all this. Apparently there was heavy taxes on all the wines and everything. So they're making brandy, they're making all this stuff, they're making it in the churches, they're shipping it out in coffins. And, when we first started watching this, in the church service, and Peter Cushing is the preacher, and he's dishing out burns left and right. Like, he's like, oh, you should be thankful for what you have. Everyone has something to eat. He looks straight at the heavy guy in the front row and goes, some of us have too much to eat. It's like, okay, damn, he called him out right there in front of the church.
Yeah, he was throwing mad shade at everyone in the town. A lot of shade for the people. More so that guy and the king's men that come in. Because he has a past. Spoiler alert. He has a past. And you learn that, further into the movie. It's, I enjoyed all the films. It's very story driven. And, everyone does their performance. Some of it was shocking to me because there's some scenes that are like, whoa.
Yeah, like the very beginning of it starts off with you don't see Captain Clegg. You just see like over his shoulder. And they've got a guy who has attacked Captain Clegg's wife. And so they order his ears to be slit, his tongue cut out, and he's to be left on a deserted island to die of starvation. And they show him chained him to a post out there on this island with a sign that said, he attacked Captain Clegg's wife. And they just leave him out there. They just literally took a knife and like run down the middle of his ears and then cut his tongue out and left him there.
I mean, I guess it's, typical pirate behavior.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't nice people, but, this seemed a little extra.
I did like the, we had seen a movie last week, Some Like It Hot. And in that film, if anyone has seen this film, there's a scene where there's like a funeral procession going on. and one of the cars that are driving along has a coffin in it, and you come to find out they're actually bootleggers that are taking this coffin that's filled with liquor to their, you know, I was going to say underground lair. Wow.
Speakeasy.
To the speakeasy. And
well, it's kind of a lair.
You see that here in this film where the bar, the church, and the coffin maker are kind of all interconnected via tunnels.
Yeah, they had some mad tunneling skills in this movie because these weren't like dirt tunnels. These were nice, well-crafted brick wall tunnels, like with lights and everything. You felt like they were doing pretty well.
Yeah, kind of like the tunnels they have like in Portland. Like that's yeah. like a thing where they were doing, you know, passing the alcohol via the tunnels. So there's a cool scene where the King's men are coming in and they find like a door, you know, on the floor, and they go down. They're like, "What's this?" And they pierce one of the drums that happen to be down there.
Yeah, it's one of those huge wine kegs, or yeah. cask, rather.
And you think, oh, you know, shit, they got caught. And they pierce it, and stuff comes out, and it's not liquor.
Yeah, it's varnish.
And they're like, oh, okay. And they cork it up, and then they leave. That was a fucking door. It opened the door to the real place that had all the liquor in the barrels.
Yeah, just the front of it was fake and filled up with varnish, and they just put like it was just like hinge. They just pull it out and go through into the secret passage where everyone's making the booze, and it's like, oh my god, that's pretty cool. That's some Scooby-Doo shit right there.
So the villagers, they're all, it's, I'm going to assume it's Sunday. Everyone's at church, and, you know, it's like the King's men come in. We kind of jumped the gun, but the King's men come, and they're, you know, trying to get, see what's going on in the
town. Yeah, they're demanding they're hiding to liquor. Just search all the businesses, the houses. They're just looking to see who's hiding booze.
And the most important thing that you get out of this, like, whole situation, there's, like, a lore that there's these marsh phantoms, which this is, I thought this was more going to be, like, a seafaring film, and maybe there's going to be, like, some phantoms flying around, maybe landing in the ship. I don't know what I expected. I did not expect this. Everything's on dry land, with the exception of the marshes. And there's a lot of backstory to all the things, but basically, no one's who this, the his character?
Peter Cushing.
He's, spoiler alert, he's the vicar, but also
he was Captain Clegg.
He's Captain Clegg.
And they, you know, he, when he is talking to the King's man that comes in to do all the searches, he's like, oh yes, I heard you almost caught Captain Clegg once. And he's like, yeah, I chased him halfway around the world and almost caught him. Peter Cushing's like, ah, but you didn't, did you? And you're like, oh, wow, he's just really being pissy to this
guy. He's goading him, like, bad.
Yeah, and then you realize later, of course, oh, okay, he is Captain Clegg, but...
Yeah, there's so many... There's little bits and pieces where I'm like... then you have someone hiding in the scarecrow, kind of, like, being on the lookout for, like, to hope, like, the bootleggers pass, you know, their coffin filled with rum. And the Captain Clegg, a.k.a. Peter Cushing character... He's actually taking that money. He's not taking it for himself. He actually gives back to the town. He helps everyone, you know, that lives around there. He's brought the town up. Like, the townspeople love him, and he's really respected and admired. And the Kingsmen kind of, like, fuck all the shit up, because if it wasn't for them, they could have continued living their ways, you know? Yeah. And I love the monologue that he gives where he's like, you know, yes, it's true, I am Captain Clegg, but he died. Like, Captain Clegg died, I was reborn, and I am who I am now.
And it's like, yeah, you don't stand, what is it he says, you don't stand on the scaffolding of the hang, what do they call it, the where they hang you. He's like, you don't stand on that and not change.
Yeah, he definitely changes because he, you know, they're gonna hang him.
Yeah, and he actually was hung apparently, and because he has the rope scars around his neck that are hidden by the collar he wears, and he had said, like, you know, I guess he bribed the hangman so that when he fell, he didn't, you know, the rope broke and he got away.
It's a pretty good movie. I mean. It's a weird... All the films we were expecting to be more horror-esque. This one had... And I don't know. I never read or heard anything about M. Night Shyamalan saying anything about how maybe if this film inspired him, but this movie reminded me so much of The Village.
Yeah, and it reminds me a lot, too, of, like, the plots of a lot of old Scooby-Doos, too.
Oh, for sure.
Because, like, here they are, they got the bootlegging going on, and the night creatures that people keep seeing...
Marsh phantoms.
Yes. Are, of course, all the townspeople that are involved in the bootlegging. They've got their horses, like, covered in cloth where it looks like skeletons.
Yeah, it's like black cloth and it's like painted like skeleton bones on them.
Yeah, that glows in the dark.
Yeah.
And then all the guys are wearing like skeleton outfits with capes. And it looks like when they ride across the marsh, it looks like the horses' feet are not quite touching the ground the way they have them painted. And it scares the shit out of everybody because, you know, when you're out in the marsh in the middle of the night and a whole bunch of skeletons on skeletal horses ride up on you, that's kind of pants shitting.
Yeah, it is. It's a really cool effect, too. It looks pretty deep.
It looks great.
It does look great. That's actually my favorite part of the movies, when they show the scenes where they show them, because they look fantastic and they're wearing masks, skeleton, you know, faces and everything. And not everyone in the town, see, because they've kind of, they only have like a small group of maybe like 7 or 8 guys that are doing this. It's not everyone in the town, because there's a whole bunch of other men that are not involved whatsoever.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't know what's going on, but it's just like a core group that's, you know, that's been doing all this. And, you know, before you find out that, you know, Peter Cushing's character used to be the pirate, you have like, he gets attacked at one point, and you're like, wow, okay. He gets attacked, and they're just—he's fighting the guy off, and he just jumps up, grabs like the onto like the light fixture, swings, kicks the guy, sets the guy, the place gets set on fire. Peter Cushing just jumps out the window, you know, chases him down the street, like no knife, no nothing. He's just gonna go barehanded, beat this guy's ass down. And you're like, shit, Peter Cushing's already like 50 years old at the point this movie came out, and he's still kicking ass.
Yeah, and this is like husky, thick, like, you know, dude that he's fighting, and here you go, like, Ichabod Crane, like, looking motherfucker, come on over here, like, fighting this guy, like, fist to fist, and you're like, oh my god,
this is amazing. He was a badass, because
his wig did not come off his head. It was very impressive.
No, he did not get that wig knocked off one time. You know, there may have been a stunt double for some of this, but I choose not to believe that. I choose Peter Cushing did all this.
And the wig guys, and ladies, and all of you people out there, it's like half black and like half like gray. I mean, the film is black and white. Oh, the film is not in black and white. No, oh shit, the film is black and white in my mind.
No, the next one was black and white that we watched. Oh, yeah. You get them confused.
Yes, I'm sorry, it wasn't color. It was technicolor. It was a crazy color. So yeah, he has a half black, half gray wig. It's very weird.
So yeah, creepy wig aside for Peter Cushing, the rest of the movie is really good. I liked it. So like I said, it's a little slow paced, but all these movies were back then. Even when you watch some stuff like, I think Psycho is like the fastest paced one that came out back then, it still moves pretty slow by today's standards.
Yeah, I give it a solid 3 knives.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I'd agree. I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, and you can maybe watch it with maybe like, I would say, 11 plus years old.
Yeah, it'd be a good one. It'd be another good kind of starter horror movie. There's nothing too graphic in it.
Or under 3.
Or they don't understand what's going on.
Under 3 or for or over 11.
Yeah, for their, like I said, there's nothing too graphic in it, so it's not going to freak any kids out. They don't really show any of the thing, like him getting his tongue cut or anything. They just say it.
Yeah, well, 3 solid knives, and you also concur. Yeah,
3 knives.
3 knives. Well, our next film
is Paranoiac, which I didn't know was a word. I just thought they made that up, but apparently it is a word.
It is a word. Some of them who suffers from paranoia.
I just thought you called that person paranoid.
This could have been, these last two films, this film could have totally been a Twilight Zone episode.
More of a night gallery, I think.
Night gallery? Okay.
Night gallery was all about people, like, trying to fuck with people to get fortunes.
Yeah, but, I guess, this could have been, this reminded me of a Twilight Zone episode, but it needed, like, the lesson learned at the end. Yeah. That would have definitely wrapped it up to be a Twilight
Zone. That's why I thought it was more night gallery-ish, because it's just kind of a creepy story.
Yeah, it's a great story. You have, it opens up, you're at another funeral.
Oh, yeah.
And you've come to find that this family has befell, like, you know, a whole bunch of death. Mother, father dead.
And then their son.
Son.
That was 15 at the time. He committed suicide because he was so distraught over their death.
And now the sister crazy. And the other brother is a, you know, drunk.
Asshole.
He's a big asshole. Who's played by Oliver Reed, who was also in the last film.
He was in the last film, played one of the characters in that. And, you know, this guy, they let you know he's an asshole right off the bat because he's playing the pipe organ in the church and he's smoking. When he's done, he crushes out the cigarette and drops it down into one of the slots on the pipe organ. So you know he's an asshole right off the bat.
Yeah, Simon, he's obsessed with alcohol and money. You know, he just cares about himself. He doesn't give a fuck about anyone else.
Yeah, he's the typical, like, snotty, angry British guy that when they run out of brandy, smashes all the glasses and screams at the butler to go get more. But you find out that they're waiting to inherit money until they reach a certain age. I'm guessing they're supposed to be 21. They said it was 8 years ago when the accident happened, and this would make the oldest brother 23, and the younger one, he would have to be 21, because they said he was plotting, like, when he was 13. So, when he's 21, he's going to inherit all this money, but until then, he has to, abide by what the executor of the estate says, and he tells him, like, no, I think $20 a week is enough for wine. I don't think you need to, or for alcohol. You don't need to be spending more than that. And you find out that he's, like, racked up debts all over town. No one will extend him credit anymore. And, you know, he stands to inherit, like, like 300,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way this guy's drinking and carrying on, he's going to be out of that money in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. He's doesn't know how to deal with his money at all besides spending it on fucking wine and, or I should say, alcohol overall. And the finest of things. He's all about the finer things in life.
Yeah. He mentions that a few times.
A lot of times. He's a good-looking chap. But that's all he got going for him. He has money. Well, he doesn't have any money at this point. The family lawyer is the one who sets him, like, straight, telling him that he doesn't give a fuck if he ends up in jail or whatever. He's not helping him. He gotta get the shit straight. He has to wait 3 weeks. But then the fucking son, you know, goes down the hall, and there's the lawyer's son, who invites him into his, they go into his office, and basically Simon's like, look, I know your dad's a good guy. He's not taking any money from the estate, but I know your ass is taking some money from the estate. Why don't you give me $100 a week until the 3 weeks are up and we'll just call it even.
Yeah, you know, so you know right away, this guy, everything's suspect. And so then, just out of the blue, like a couple of times, the sister, they've called her crazy because she says she keeps seeing Tony.
Eleanor.
She keeps seeing Tony, which was the brother who killed himself. Well, then she's so distraught by everything that's going on, she's out by the cliffside and just throws herself into the ocean.
And of course, there's a man that had been looking down from the cliff and seen this, and he throws himself into the ocean after her. They do that off camera.
Yeah.
The next time they show them, he's, you know, got her in arms, wet, going into the house. And everyone is just like,
Tony, is that you?
Yeah.
Is that you, Tony?
Not believing it's Tony, but alas, he's there to say, hey, I'm Tony. He has to take, like, a series of questions from the lawyer, because you just can't come up and be like, hey, I'm the fucking brother that, you know, committed suicide, but I'm back now, like, 8 years later.
They're asking, like, well, why did you leave this note? And he's like, well, I just wanted to get away. Like, why didn't you just run off? So I started asking him all kinds of crazy questions.
What kind of pony did you own when you were 9 years old? You know, crazy fucking questions. What did I give you for your birthday
when you were 10 and all this stuff?
We never found out the question to that by the motherfucking way.
The answer, you mean?
Oh, the answer, yes. We never found out the answer. And the other thing that pissed me off, I was just like, but he goes on to tell you what he got when he was 9. 11, like 12, all the ages, like four other ages.
But he missed, he didn't remember what he got from the guy when he was 10. The guy's like, I don't know, that's pretty suspect for me.
He was probably,
he remembered every other year.
He was like, well, no, that was the most boss gift I ever fucking gave you. So that's the one you don't remember? I don't know, you can't be Tony. So you, of course, everyone is suspect Simon doesn't want him to be fucking Tony, because this is just one more. He's trying to get rid of the sister. Like, he's trying to throw her ass into the fucking insane asylum so he can get her fucking share of the money.
Yeah.
He doesn't need, you know, dead brother coming up trying to get his fucking pounds. He's like, hell no. So he goes on a, he's already, at the, you know, he's already fucked at the beginning of the movie, but now he's like, woo, off the edge. Drinking more than ever, you know, doing crazy shit.
Starting bar fights.
All kinds of, he's acting out like he's like 12 years old and he doesn't know how to do anything. He's just a big baby. And the sister has completely done a three fucking six. She's like, here I am. I'm perfect. I'm happy. My brother Tony's back. We're just inseparable. We're, they're like fucking skipping down the damn yard. Like, everything is good.
Yeah, and then you see, you know, the scene where Tony, who's answered all these questions, and everyone's starting to believe, hey, Tony's back. Tony's back.
And he won't drink liquor. Like, he's offered liquor by Simon, and he's like, no, I don't drink. I don't want to drink anything.
And then he slips off, and he's at a, you see him at a place, and he's like, someone says, oh, would you care for a drink? He goes, well, Tony doesn't drink, but I do.
Dun, dun, dun.
And you figure out, well, he's in on it with the lawyer's son. They're working together to try and get this going because they know that once he gets the share of the money, the lawyer's son and him are going to split it.
Of course. So that's like 150,000 pounds.
Yep.
And they're going to be, you know, get that extra money in their pocket. And he looks a lot like, supposedly, according to the lawyer's son, he looks a lot like Tony. He fits the bill. He could have been Tony 8 years later.
Yeah.
This film does a lot of, like, there's so many things going on in the movie because, and it's like slow, like not slow, like in the sense of just like the pace of it, but just like, here's this one thing here. You got the mystery of like, is this really Tony? Then you're like, what the fuck is going on with Simon? He's kind of losing it. He doesn't seem right. Then the aunt has her own like bullshit going on. Like, it's just crazy because
this is a house full of crazy people.
Yes, it is a house full of crazy people. Everyone's trying. Everyone has their own thing that's going on. Then you have, oh, we forgot about the French nurse, Vava Voom, who's there trying to take Monique. Care of the sister who was really bought over by Simon so he could have someone to bang. That's literally her only purpose in the film.
Yeah, they said literally, like, well, you know I'm not a nurse. And he goes, eh, you fit my qualifications.
Yeah, which so is
wow. Okay, boobs. That was straight out obvious.
Yeah, he's mad scandalous. Tony,
fake Tony.
He's, well, we don't really actually ever find out what his real name is.
Yeah, so we'll just call him Tony, I guess.
So I think his name might be Anthony. Like, I think his real name might be. I mean, let's just say that it is Tony. Fake Tony. Can we call him Phony?
Yeah, Phony.
Phony. Phony's there, and he's trying, like, he's subtly putting the moves on the sister. So he has to get reminded by the lawyer's son, like, hey, that's your sister, so watch out. Can't be falling in love and trying to get into her knickers.
Because that's supposed to be your sister, so you gotta watch what you're doing here. But, yeah, he forgets about that pretty quick.
Yeah, she's so nice.
And they do the thing like, oh, I'm going to give you a kiss goodnight. First of all, she gives him like an open mouth kiss and steps back. But then she kind of goes back for more and Tony doesn't stop it. They just start making out hard right there on the steps. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh my God, what am I doing?
I'm an incestuous, disgusting whore. I have to go and stab myself with these nearby scissors and cut my hand open, which I didn't know what the hell that was about. Because she was looking directly at her hand, at her wrist. So I don't know. Maybe she was going to cut her fingers off. It's not like she, like, twiddled his D. Like, well, I don't.
She went crazy. And then, of course, he just finally tells her, like, look, okay, you're not a bad person because I'm not your brother.
So. I'm not Tony.
So it's spoiler alert. Okay. It's fine.
You can twiddle my D. Don't cut your fingers off. You're going
to
need that
don't
later.
Have to be crazy like this. You're not crazy. You're just horny. I'm not your brother, so it's fine if we bang.
Now, since they obviously are living in the same house, there's been two times that there's been some weird music playing with some weird person singing, and it happens to be young Tony. So now I'm thinking, oh, this is a fucking ghost movie. Like, he's a ghost, or he never died, and it's kind of like the boy situation, spoiler alert, where he's, like, living in the fucking walls. Because for some reason, there's, like, a burned-down church on the fucking, on the property of this house. Like, they have, like, because there's, like, an organ in there.
It's, yeah, I think they weird. Just have, like, the pipe organ type thing from a church there. I think they used to play while Tony would sing.
Yeah, I guess they're, like, so rich, they're like, you know what? He likes to sing in the choir. The other son plays the organ. Let's just make him a little fake church in the back, you know,
yeah.
on our lot here so they can have practice like they're the fucking monkeys.
So, yeah, so you see Simon in there playing the organ, and then there's a small person dressed in, like, a choir robe with a fucked up mask on.
Really fucked up mask.
Oh, and a metal hook for a hand.
Well, you know.
Just standing there. Tony sees this.
And singing.
Singing. Tony sees this.
Like, his balls have not dropped kind of singing.
Yeah. Tony sees this, gets almost slashed by the hook, and then everybody's just like, what are you talking about? There's no one out there.
There is no one out there.
You are just making this shit up, my friend.
And the second time it happens,
you find out it's their aunt that lives out there with them. She's dressed like that because Simon just misses Phony, or Mrs. Tony, rather, and just wants to play.
And he hasn't been right ever since Phony came around, and it's reactivated his craziness, because that motherfucker was crazy after everything that happened, but then he got okay, and he's had bouts of crazy. But, you know, I was doing this to, like, subside the crazy, but I thought, like, she goes, like, at a mad rant of a monologue. She's like, but now, Phony, you've come back, and I thought that was going to make him better, because his guilt was going to be lifted, but alas. Yes,
wait, guilt about what? So it doesn't take you too long to figure out that the reason Simon's pretty sure that Phony isn't real is that he killed Tony.
He fucking killed Tony like Edgar Allan Poe style, bricked his ass up.
In the building where they practice.
Yeah, wearing the crazy choir robe and the fucking mask.
I think that was just his face. Was that the mask or was that his face?
No,
just,
like, that distorted? No, it was, oh God, that's a like, what did he look like when he was 15? No, I'm pretty sure that was a mask. We'll have to go back. We'll put a photo up of it.
But yeah, so that's what's going on with that. And, you know, this is one of those movies, too, that, like, all of these movies kind of end rather abruptly. Like, they're going along, and you're getting, like, to the exciting part, and then you're like, oh, and then now it's over.
And the end.
Yep, he killed him, and now that's the end. Everybody move on with your life.
Yeah, there's a whole, obviously, there's a fight scene between Phony and Simon, you know, and the freaking aunt gets in it, and she doesn't want...
The catches on fire, as they always do.
Yeah, they always catch on fire, and, you know, it's just, it's the last, I would say, 20 minutes of the film are probably the best parts of the movie, because that's where it starts, like, revving up, and, you know, there's, like, one after another, like, surprise, this is what's happening in the movie, like, this is what's really going on, and then the movie ends.
Yeah, it ends pretty abruptly.
I give it 2.5 knives.
Yeah, it was entertaining. It was, like I said, it was a little slow. All of these movies are all about an hour and a half, but I really feel like they have about an hour's worth of really good material for each one, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And they just were padded out just a little bit too much. And our final Hammer film of the day was Kiss of the Vampire.
Whoa. Best opening to a film ever.
Yeah, you just see, like, they're having a funeral. Everyone's sad. They lower the coffin down into the ground, and then this strange, creepy-looking man just comes up, you think to pay his respects, and he asks, like, puts his hand out for the shovel. You think he's going to put a shovel full of dirt on the coffin. No, he just stabs down through the coffin, and then you hear, like, the person inside screaming. Yeah, like, screaming, and then just blood bubbles up out of the coffin. Everyone in the funeral is just like, well, fuck this, I'm out. And they all just scatter to the four winds.
Even the priest.
Priest is like, I didn't sign up for this shit. One day I knew I'd have to fight the devil, but I didn't think it would be today, so I'm out.
Yeah, my workers come and cover this. I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, I gotta get the hell out of here. And then we cut to the titles, like, bum, 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 Kiss of the Vampire.
Oh, well, let's not forget the most important scene and the part of that is that As everyone runs away, the camera goes into the casket to show you who's in it, and it's an up-close face of a woman who has her fangs out.
Yep. So, clearly a vampire.
Now, these newlyweds, you know, they are in their fancy fuck car.
For the time, the fancy car.
Fancy car. I'll take that car right now.
Yeah, I bet that thing went 25 miles an hour.
Yeah, it probably did. It takes petrol. Petrol. You had mentioned that it was like, it's in like in a museum of like an automotive museum.
Yeah, it was loaned to the Hammer Film company by an automotive museum there. And it's a very rare kind of car. So they...
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's very cool looking. And you can tell it's, you know, it's got the kind that's got the... There's no real windshield on. You're just kind of sitting out there in the middle of everything while you drive. There's no roof. So I hope it didn't rain while they were driving out in this like weird European countryside.
Typical horror movie fashion, the car breaks down. And he has to go get gas. And he leaves his woman alone.
He leaves his new wife. Well, you just sit out here on the creepy roads, my dear. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'll just go down the road and come back with some petrol or something.
Yeah, petrol, yeah. And it's like they're strangers in this town. They're not from this town. They're like driving through. And he goes, of course, as he disappears, that's when she decides, you know what? I'm going to get out of the car and walk around. And then she almost gets like fucking murdered, like a branch, like a piece of the tree. I'm going to say just, a branch because that was a big ass fucking piece of the tree.
Yeah, just falls out and almost crushes her just randomly.
But from afar, you see someone overlooking the castle there into the fucking street.
Yeah, he's got the full on.
I want to say street because it's more of a dirt road.
He's got the creeper telescope there, like giant looking telescope peeping down on her, like, ah, yes, an attractive woman.
I feel like he threw that fucking thing on her, trying to kill her.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's watching her, and, you know, she starts running, you know, in some random direction because she doesn't know where the fuck she's going. And she runs into the strange man. Who we know from the beginning of the movie because he's the guy who ended up at the funeral throwing that damn shovel down. And he's like, you know, go back to your car, go back to where, you know, your car where you came from. So, of course, she goes back to the car. That's where the guy's at, her husband. You find out that's their newlyweds.
He's returned from the village with a guy and a horse. They're going to tow the car back to the local hotel. And the local hotel looks like no one stayed there in about 50 years.
Yeah, and it's the Grand Hotel. There was nothing grand about it. It was worn down fucking hotel. Like, when they walked in, and there was, like, the sheets were on top of everything. Mad, dusty, like, gross.
Yeah, no one had been there in a while.
The couple was elated. The couple that owned the hotel are elated that there's actually people there, because there hasn't been anyone there in a really long time. And basically, to cut, like, a lot of bullshit, the town is, like, cursed, in a sense, because everyone just shows, you know, women are just showing up, missing, and never seen again, and or, you know, vampires.
So, they are there for just a few minutes when suddenly a coach arrives with a letter for them, and says, like, oh, I couldn't help but notice you're at the hotel. Would you like to come and dine at my castle tonight with me? They're like, oh, yeah, you should definitely go have dinner with the
doctor. Yeah, because he's rich, and he has great food, and my wife's food sucks, so you shouldn't go to this hotel to this dinner. I'm going to tell you, all these films that have vampires in them, all the old ones, there's always an invite to the vampire's house, and it's usually a coach will come, because a vampire, he's fancy as fuck. He has to, like, iron his cape. He doesn't have time to go to, like, invite you. He has, like, his, like, Igor bitch to go get you with the fucking carriage, and he's inviting you to dinner. Do not go to dinner. I mean, unless you're really into that thing, and you're looking to be, like, vampire, like, breakfast or lunch dinner, you know, or side bitch. Don't accept the vampire or any invitation that you don't know from anyone, like, in the town, from anyone, because you're gonna end up dead.
Yeah, so they go to this place, and of course it's fucking creepy. Like, you walk in, there's all, like, a weird bird cage right in the entrance way. There's, like, a statue of a satyr holding, like, a serving tray. So that's completely normal.
I thought that was the fucking devil.
No, it looks like one of those ones, like, Pan kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, well, he was all red. That's kind of got threw me off.
Yeah, and so that's holding, like, a tray there. Like, oh, okay, well, that's not suspicious at all. And you see, like, a creepy girl in, like, a all red and green velvet outfit, like, creeping around. He takes the doctor and introduces himself to them and says, oh, come meet my children.
Yeah, you right go, there, boom, vampire. Like,
you go in there, and there's Carl and Sabina. They're playing piano, and just, you know, Carl's playing piano while Sabina just stares at him. And then I love the part where the doctor is explaining to him, oh, yes, I moved here because I was doing some experiments, and, well, things went wrong, as they're wont to do in scientific experiments. And, well, now I was no longer welcome there, so I had to move here. And they're all just like, ha, yes, what a fascinating story, doctor. No, I need details, asshole. What did you do that they threw you out of town?
Yeah, he's Herr Doctor. He's fucking German. Okay, so we all know what's up. You know, you've seen that movie, Human Centipede. It's gonna be some fucked up shit.
Anytime there's a German doctor in a movie, it's not gonna be good.
No, it's not gonna be a good thing. So, you know, not for nothing, I like my vampires not to be sparkly, but to have some kind of sex appeal. I didn't want to have sex with this vampire. Like you said, he was the poor man's Christopher Lee / Peter Cushing. Like, they were busy and they just had to get this guy.
They were like, here's a guy that looks a little like Peter Cushing, a little like Christopher Lee. He's not very tall like Christopher Lee. He doesn't have quite as much presence as Peter Cushing, but we'll just slap him in here and hope that everyone will think it's them.
Yeah, it's, he's not sexy. Now, of course, the daughters and the son, they're good-looking people because, you know, you gotta even it out. You're not gonna have, you know, disgusting-looking people around you. You're gonna have, like, good-looking vampires because they attract... That's what attracts people to other people, right? Yep. Especially back in the day. It's not like this guy's going to whip out, you know, he didn't know how to play the piano, the son. He had that going for him. But he, you know, wasn't necessarily rich. He didn't have come into his own money and or, you know, he didn't have a fancy-ass car or an iPhone. So, you know, I'm just saying.
Okay.
It took good standards. Like, people are just so superficial. So all he had was his looks to attract the ladies to come to him so they could drink his blood. Yeah. Or he could drink their blood, I should say.
Yeah, so they stay the first... They don't stay there the first night. He's just like, oh, you can go on back to your hotel now if you like. We've had our dinner. We've all drank some absinthe and some brandy. Your wife has been creepily hypnotized while Carl plays one of his original compositions on the piano.
That's like 20 minutes long.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's fine. Just go back. We'll send someone with an ox to bring back some petrol for you from the town 30 miles away. Which, of course, back then, if you had to send an ox 30 miles, it was probably going to take like 3 days for it to get there.
And it did.
And 3 days to get back. So then they tell him, like, well, since you're going to be here for this long, you might as well come to our party on Saturday. We'll send you the outfits to wear. Okay, anytime someone sends you a special outfit to wear to a party, they're going to murder you there. And they have a very specific way they're going to do it, and they want you in a certain outfit when they put you in the casket.
Yeah, because you didn't leave with your clothes. Like, there's no clothes. Like, you're not going to be like, oh, this person was identified, and oh, look, it has to be, you know, John Watson, because that's his coat, you know.
Yeah.
He's wearing fucking, you don't know what he's wearing, so no go. I love the fact that the husband... He's so, like, aloof about everything because while they're at the dinner party and then later on at the ball, he's just drinking and drinking and drinking. And it takes him a while to figure out that some shit is fucking askew. Like,
yeah, because they enter the place and they're like, here, here's a mask for everyone. We've got a mask for you, m'lady. Although, oh, it's so terrible to have to put this mask on you. And here's a mask for you, dude. And they hand him this mask that looks like a devil mask, but with cat whiskers. It was very strange.
It is very strange. Everyone, all the women are wearing, like, basic, like, the basic mask, like, Lone the white Ranger or black. Kind of mask. Yeah, and then the men are wearing very elaborate-looking, ghoulish, devilish-looking masks. And it's a masquerade ball, so... I was, like, looked over to Shad, I'm like, all these motherfuckers are vampires. Like, this is a vampire masquerade ball.
Yep. And so immediately Carl or one of the other people is like, hey, let me just take your wife in here and have a dance with her while we take you over here and get you a drink. Then as soon as they're out of, like, sight, they have Carl come over and he switches masks to put on the same mask as the husband. Then after the wife has danced for a while, which seemed like she danced a long time.
This bitch danced for like 2 hours.
And then he's wearing the mask and the same outfit as the husband. He's like, oh, come upstairs. And motions her. It's not until they're upstairs that she's like, wait a minute. I don't think you are my husband. And he whips the mask off and is like, nope, I'm Carl. Throws her in the room and leaves her to his father, the vampire.
Yeah, so we all know what happens there. And then let's skip to the part where now everyone has gone home. The ball is over. And now people are just coming out the woodwork and they're all dressed in the white gowns. So you're like, okay, this is weird. They're all sitting in like rows. They're all filling themselves in the room. And
they all sit down kind of like one in front of the other, like where you can reach out and touch the person in front of you.
They're not practicing social distancing, though.
No. And then they're just like, oh, we may have a new disciple today.
So it's like a cult of vampires.
Yeah, they're all just hanging out in this castle.
Which it's never explained why they were all there to begin with. Like, did he call them and be like, look, I just got a new hot piece of ass in town. She is looking great. So we need to add her to our, like, you know, cult that we got going on. So I'm going to have a ball on Saturday. And then, you know, after we're going to, like, induct her. And then what else? Like, what was the whole point of it? Did that happen? Like, why were they there to begin with? It's never clarified. Yep. You never get into, like, what's the reasoning behind all these vampires being there? Because you would think that it's not a big deal. It's just one girl. It's not like they're, you know, inducting like 20 million other people. But maybe she was going to be the new mom because he had more of a like
standard kind of family thing going.
Yeah. So like he didn't introduce her as like, this is my new daughter. He's like, no, she's in, you know, he asked her like a series of questions. She's like, I love you. I want to be with you. It seemed like it was a little more than just like father-daughter talk.
Yeah, he was going to make her the new wife, I think.
So you don't get really clarity on what's going on with the situation. But it's a cult of vampires and they induct, you know, this woman into their new cult. And the poor husband, man, he wakes up and he's all dizzy and fucked up because they slipped some shit in his drink, some vampire roofie.
Yeah, especially when someone says, go get him a very special glass of champagne. And they practically wink when they say it. They're like, oh, I don't want to drink that shit because there's nothing good in there. That's going to be a roofie cocktail right there.
And it was. And he's all fucked up and he wakes up. And he's asking for his wife and everyone, including, like, the people that invited him there.
Or like, I'm sorry, you don't have a wife.
No, and you're embarrassing, and I don't even want to invite you to anything else anymore, because, look, you can't handle your shit, basically, is what he's been told. You gotta leave.
How dare you, sir? And they just throw his ass out.
And he's, like, walking in the fucking dirt road with his, like, borrowed-ass tux, sans wife. And he gets back and he asks the fucking innkeeper, like, oh, you know, have you seen my wife? I gotta help, you know, my wife, she's missing. And he's like, what wife? And you're like, what? Yep. What are you talking about?
Everyone's just like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You never had a wife here. He calls the police. The police are like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you because you never had a wife. There's only one person checked into this hotel and it's you, chief. You're alone.
You're alone. Just
traveling alone.
You got no clothes. You got no marriage certificate. You got nothing. You got no photo. Because literally the innkeeper came and like took everything out that had any fucking, you know, clue to him having a wife or anyone with him.
So that's when he runs into the creepy guy who you've seen a few times before this, like kind of just drunk around the town. The creepy guy that stabbed the vampire.
Professor
Zimmerman. And he tells him, great, you can help me out tonight and I'll help you get your wife back because I've been waiting for the Capricorn-Saturn alignment under a full moon to cast this spell on the vampires that will kill them all. It will turn all their evil against them.
And you're like, oh, okay, that's new. There's vampires? Okay, good. He's like, it's vampires. And then he gets into my favorite part of the movie, his monologue of how he explains what happened to his daughter. And literally the story starts sounding like a back-to-school special because then he was like, and she was riddled with disease. And you're like, oh, shit.
And that disease was vampirism. You're like, oh, okay. Oh,
okay, that's what it is. Because, like, he started off with, like, she was young. She left home. She went into another town and met a man. And the man, you know, was no good. And then she came back. And she was riddled with disease. And you're like, oh my goodness. She went into the big city. She did her thing. Came back. She got the fucking, you know, the Hibs, the something. She got some crazy vagina disease.
But yeah, no, it was just vampirism. So it was fine.
And they go to fucking... The funny thing about the movie, too, is just, like, there is no time where they, like, actually... Like, this is our plan. He's like, look, we're gonna go here, we're gonna do this, because the husband does basically everything himself. The professor barely does anything. He's not even there when he needs to fucking be there. This guy comes into a house full of fucking vampires. He has nothing. No stake, no gun, nothing.
He didn't bring a stick with him.
He bought his wits and his fists, and he was like, I'm here and I'm trying to get Marianne, my wife, back.
Yeah, and he does the trick, though, in this, though, when he gets clawed by one of the vampires that leaves blood on him where you can see. And he does the trick that they do in a lot of the Hammer movies where you don't have to have a crucifix to hold the vampires at bay, just a cross. And he just makes a blood cross on himself, and they're all like, ah, cover that, wipe it off. And he manages to get away, which there was one of the other Hammer films where they used a windmill to kill the vampire. They just made it into the cross shape, and the shadow of it just melted him.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, so they're big on the crosses killing the vampires in these. You don't have to be a crucifix. You just take two sticks together and it's a cross.
Yeah, anything. Forks, knives, anything you got around, you just make it a cross.
Which I guess, and that's probably where, like, From Dusk Till Dawn got it, where they were using everything, you know?
Yeah, it's just like the whole lore. You just have to have... You have to have faith and a cross. Because the guy asked him, he goes, do you believe in, you know, whatever? And then he's like, nah, I'm not a... Are you a religious man? He's like, I'm a religious... He goes, but do you believe in God? And he's like, yeah, I believe in God. And he's like, okay, boom. You're good.
He goes, and, you know, they eventually do get the wife out. And the doctor there, he's just casting his spell. And he's calling on, like, Alpha God, Beelzebub. He's calling on everybody to come and get these vampires. And then you see his spell goes through and works, and a flock of vampire bats...
Woolworth bats.
Yeah, we read somewhere in one of the trivia things that they bought the bats at Woolworth's. They all fly in and attack all of the vampires because it's turned their evil against them. And, you know, it's hilarious because you can literally see they're just throwing the bats at some people. One guy's just sitting on the ground with bats on him, and they just throw a bat that bounces off of his head.
The funniest part in that sequence is when the dad vampire, he has a vampire on his left side of his neck, on his right side of his neck, and here comes, like, the fucking Three Stooges of fucking bats, like, come in, one in each direction, and, like, bang him on the fucking head on the sides, and then fly away. He just collapses, and I'm like, what the fuck? They just headbanged. Those bats just headbanged that vampire.
Knocked him out.
And then the movie ends.
Yeah, the vampires all die, and you kind of see one quick scene where the guy's wife is returning to normal.
She doesn't even say anything. She just opens her eyes, looks at her husband, and then it's like the end.
Yeah, they don't waste a lot of time in these movies.
They're like, look, we just spent, like, it's an hour and a half movie, but it feels like you've been sitting here for 3 hours, but we're going to abruptly end this shit because that's it. We ran out of ideas. There's nothing more.
Yeah. So I'd give this one, again, about 2.5 knives. It's a good enough movie, but it does need to pick up the pace a little bit, and it's a little clunky with some of the effects.
I wanted there to be, you know... I need the movies. See, I always had this image in my head where when I see the vampire bitches, like, they're gonna be all floating, wearing, like, very see-through, like, white nightgowns, and their hair is gonna be down. Like,
that's the Bram Stoker Dracula ones, basically.
Yeah, but not as slutty, though. See, I don't want them to be, like, whores. I want them to just be, like... regular women
just sexily dressed.
Sexily dressed, walking around with their long hair, like, wavering in the wind. Is that too fucking much to ask for? Like, I thought that this was the whole big deal with these Hammer films were going to be about. Like, this is what I was expecting, and I don't get any of that.
A little more. These are early 60s Hammer films. As you get into the later ones, they get a little more sexy.
Yeah, I need to get
those. But you gotta remember, for this being coming out in 1963... I mean, you were seeing a lot of leg, and you saw some women's underwear in this in some parts. That was pretty scandalous for back in the day.
Yeah, I guess it was scandalous. Because it's British, I just thought it was going to just be just a tad. I mean, I know they're, conservative, but also just a tad. I'm thinking, obviously, of the later ones.
Yeah.
And we'll get to those eventually, but for this set, it's a pretty decent set.
Yeah, we actually got this set. I won it in a contest that was sponsored by Matt Serafini, who is a horror author who has written quite a few good things. I've actually read The Rites of Extinction that he wrote, and he's got some others called Under the Blade and Devil's Row, Feral. He's got several others, but I've only read The Rites of Extinction, but I'm working my way through his and Adam Caesar, who's a friend of his, and They've both got some good stuff. I've been working my way through their books.
It's the Hammer Horror 8 film collection, and it has a little bit, has some werewolf stuff, it has the Phantom of the Opera, has some vampire stuff.
Some Frankenstein, there's a little bit of everything in this.
Yeah, you get a little bit of everything in there, so, it's a good time to sit back and kind of...
Catch up on some of these movies.
Catch up on the movies, definitely. And, just go back into a little bit of horror history and watch the oldies. Well, thank you so much for getting hammered with us. And stay tuned to the horror.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.